We asked Ron Van Dam to tell us what he knows about his listeners.
They're not pretty, and they make a lot of noise when they're mating.
I'm a little concerned as to how you know that. Probably best not to think about it. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's The Ron Van Dam Show.
Okay, thank you.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the program of enormous proportions. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I am Ron Van Dam. The proportions today are quite enormous. We have a very special program for you today. I depart from the usual satirical comedy aspect of the program, and we get into some interesting social and political conversation. And we do that with a very special expert who has written a book that is going to take us through this. It's very interesting. It's an extended interview. We're going to talk for almost an hour today. Oh, my God. Yeah. So let's get to it. My guest is Ira Shapiro. He's written a book called The Betrayal, How Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republicans Abandoned America. Here we go, because there's a lot to talk about. Ira, thanks for being with us today.
Ron, it's great to be with you. And these kind of conversations are wonderful because you can actually get into the issues.
That's true. That's very true. Let's start with your background, because people should know you know of Whence Do You Speak. How long have you been involved in government and serving accordingly?
Well, actually, I got involved with the Senate about one day after graduating college. Ooh. Which was in the Boston area, Brandeis University.
Sure.
And I got hooked on the Senate early and came back to work there after law school 12 years. And so I've been out of the Senate for a long time, but I looped back many years after. Troubled by the decline in the Senate, I looped back and started writing about it. And I've now written three books on the Senate. I've given it more thought than any reasonable person should actually do.
Probably so. Three books. And that probably won't stop you, I'm going to assume, as well.
Oh, no, the three will stop me.
Oh, okay.
My next book will be something else.
Yeah, that's probably what you said after the two. Okay. All right, let's get into it. You know, the lay person, which is everybody else, is wondering what the hell is going on. And I was in Congress. Let's first explain what Congress is supposed to be. Why do we have a Congress at all? What are they supposed to be doing?
Well, I think that most people know that Congress, which was created by Article 1 of the Constitution, is the legislative branch, and it's supposed to essentially deal with national problems by legislating, and also it is supposed to oversee the executive branch. The Senate, I think, has a particular responsibility. The founders thought hard about it and decided they wanted a strong Senate. That reflected their ambivalence about the executive, the president. The Articles of Confederation had failed, and they felt they needed a strong federal government and a strong president, but they feared a possible authoritarian or a corrupt president. So their compromise was, as you know, our checks and balances system, and particularly having the strongest Senate in the world. So fast forward 230 plus years, the point of my book is that I believe Donald Trump's presidency was a catastrophe for the country, but the catastrophic failure of government was the Senate. They didn't check. the authoritarian president, and they failed us repeatedly and consciously.
Yes, yes, they did. And as you mentioned in the opening, the very strongest reason for having a Congress would be to keep check on the president, so an authoritative personality could not succeed. And yet, this is what happened, oddly enough. Would it be because Trump was a Republican and putting forth many of their views, and they didn't want to mess with that?
I certainly think that is part of it. But I take a long, because of my long involvement with this thinking about the Senate, mm-hmm. I take a somewhat longer view in the sense that if you look at it, I wrote my first book, which was entitled The Last Great Senate. Now, spoiler alert, it may have been the only great Senate.
Mm-hmm.
The Senate of the 60s and the 70s, which maintained some momentum into the 80s. The Senate of Ted Kennedy,
yes,
and Howard Baker and Jacob Javits and,
yeah,
Bob Dole, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Over a long period of time, and I would say literally 30 years, the Senate has been declining. And when McConnell became the opposition leader, the gradual decline turned into a steep downward spiral.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened, in my view, is that when we needed a strong Senate, we had a weak, degraded, hyper-partisan Senate with people that didn't really understand their responsibility and didn't face up to it. So they failed us. Now, did they fail us because Trump was president and they were Republicans? Yeah, that is part of it. But they failed us because they weren't real senators.
Interesting. Let's harp a little bit before we get into this, into that period of time that you had just mentioned with the Tip O'Neill, et cetera. When things were done, things were accomplished, bills were negotiated. Why was that period of time so gracious? What was going on that made that so?
Well, and it wasn't, look, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't all sweetness and light.
Oh, no, but comparatively.
Yeah, that's right, comparatively. So I think there are two factors here that were in play.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, there was genuinely, the parties were closer together. They weren't identical, but remember, there were moderate Republicans from the Northeast or the Midwest, some in California. There were conservative Democrats from the South and moderate Democrats from the South. So the parties were genuinely closer together, which made deal making more possible. But the other thing was that the people, and you mentioned Tip, and I would, you know, I certainly think he's a good example. The people who were in government in on the Hill then knew what they were there for.
Mm-hmm.
They understood what their responsibilities were, and they understood the need for collective action. And collective action required, you know, hard fights, but mm-hmm. principled compromise and trying to move the country ahead. Now, the Senate is particularly sabotaged when that kind of attitude breaks down, because the Senate is the place where the parties are supposed to come together and produce bipartisan results. The House operates more partisanly, mm-hmm. but the Senate, you're supposed to be able to compromise. Mm-hmm. And when you lose it, the whole government breaks down.
No question. You mentioned the word sabotage. I think you'll agree that the means of operation now are to destroy the other party to the point where it cannot succeed with anything that it tries to do, so it gets a bad rap. Sabotage is the name of the game. Isn't that a wonderful thing?
Well, first of all, I think, no, it's not a wonderful thing. And second, it's not a symmetrical thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a Democrat. There's no question about that. Mm-hmm. But my analysis isn't that different from a lot of former and disillusioned Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
We have one political party in this country, which is somewhat divided and occasionally fractious and troublesome. That's the Democrats. And we have one party that has increasingly become an apocalyptic cult.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a phrase, by the way, that was used by a Republican stalwart more than 10 years ago, describing his party in a book that he wrote. The Republicans have moved from, over a long period of time, they've moved from conservatism to extremism, radicalism. And so as a consequence, one party will not let the government succeed if it's led by the other party.
Mm-hmm.
And that's McConnell's game. He has specialized in obstruction of Democratic presidents.
Yes. He has. He makes it an effort not to put anything on the floor so that it can even be voted upon, so that even it even has a chance, can even be negotiated, can even be discussed.
Yeah. Well, his genius, and I in my book, I make it clear
mm-hmm.
that he's a very capable, very skillful strategist and tactician.
Mm-hmm.
His genius is two-part. One, he knows that it's easier to obstruct than to govern. Governing's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Obstructing is not very hard, particularly given the arcane Senate rules.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of his genius. And the other part, unfortunately, and we're seeing it play out yet again, is that the president, the party in power, the president, is held accountable if things aren't going well
Correct.
In the country.
Mm.
So there's an article in the Times today describing Democrats getting disappointed and frustrated and perhaps despairing
mm-hmm.
because Biden agenda is not fully succeeding.
Mm-hmm.
And they should galvanize to political action and blame the obstructionists, not be disappointed by the people who are trying. But sometimes it works for the out of power party.
Yes. Yeah, there's no question about that. There's no reason why the president can't look back at Congress and explain to the American people, as you just did at the beginning of our discussion, as to what the Congress is supposed to do and how it's being obstructed from doing that. That's a simple explanation that should be the rhetoric of the Democratic Party at this point. We have to take a break, though, but there's plenty of more time to get into this. We're going to be right back after these words.
Looking for someplace new and fun to take the family for breakfast? Then it's time to try Greg's House of Avocado Toast. Featuring all your breakfast favorites, white toast, wheat toast, rye toast, yes, even multigrain toast, and more, all topped with creamy avocado. Or mix it up a little with a toasted English muffin topped with avocado. Come in every Thursday for our chef's special creation, sourdough toast with avocado. If it's toast with avocado on top, you'll find it, and nothing else, at Greg's House of Avocado Toast.
Welcome back. We're talking to Ira Shapiro, the author of the book, The Betrayal, How Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republicans Abandoned America. It's his third book, and he claims it's his last on this subject, and we'll see. Okay, Ira, we're in the midst of a discussion about Mitch McConnell. Has Mitch McConnell always had the same acumen, or is this something that's been developed over the years? He's been in Congress for quite a period of time. What was he like before?
Well, he's He's been in the Senate since 1985. I think he was elected to his seventh term, sixth or seventh. I'd have to figure it out. But he's been there a long time. He started out as a kind of garden variety conservative Republican, moderate conservative Republican, who was proud of his civil rights record at one time.
Really?
But over time, as the party has moved, Republican Party moved, he has moved with it. And his political, when I say his acumen, I mean, let's call it genius. He's managed to surf the madness of the Republican Party and stay in power. I mean, if you look at, Ron, if you look at the House side, they've had one Republican leader after another end up on the side of the road, discarded, rejected, disgraced. But McConnell was finishing his 16th year as Republican leader. So he's managed to move himself and stay with the party. And he does it by his political skill, his mastery of fundraising, his closeness to the donor base of the party. He raises money from them, he helps spread money around, and he rewards the donor base. Mostly, well, not mostly, but leading participants being the fossil fuel industry and the NRA and the gun manufacturers.
Yeah, that could come around to bite him in the end at the next election. We don't know. It's all a question of how you bring things up and when you do it. It's all timing. But definitely sitting on the wrong side of the fence as far as the public is concerned by the polls, if you happen to believe in those things.
Yes, but he would say, mm-hmm. I mean, look, what you've described and what my hope is that the fact that an overwhelming majority of the country wants reasonable gun control measures and favors other things that McConnell and the Republicans don't.
Correct.
We would hope that would be reflected in elections. McConnell is banking on another fact, which is what we talked about before, that in off-year elections, the out-of-power party tends to do well.
Always.
He's looking for the red wave, mm-hmm. and I'm looking for a focus on who's actually blocking progress for our country in all areas.
Correct. Why are the Democrats so bad at publicly putting themselves forward, and the Republicans are so good at that, at shooting things down successfully? I mean, are Democrats just, I think it was Hillary Clinton that said, we don't go that low. Maybe you have to. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I think it was actually Michelle Obama.
Okay.
Said,
all right.
You know, when they go low, we go high.
That's
something
it.
Like that.
Yeah.
I think it's actually, like every Democrat, I am occasionally frustrated, more than occasionally frustrated, by the party.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone says, you know, the Democrats, they always bring a policy paper to a knife fight.
Correct.
I think it's a profoundly difficult problem, though, in that if you believe in governing, and if you believe that politics is not actually war. Politics is fierce combat, but sort of governed by a set of rules that make our democracy work. If you believe in that, and I do, you're faced with a very difficult choice. It's a difficult choice that Biden and Schumer face every day. Do you go low? In which case both parties are going low and it's a race to the bottom and the ability to govern unravels? Or do you try to do things and risk that the opposition will undercut everything you do? It's a very, very difficult choice. And it's taken me a while to come up with the answer, which I'll give you after your next question.
Cool. You ready for the next question?
Yeah, give me the next question.
What is the answer, Ira?
Well, no, look. The answer at this point is a single-minded focus on electing Democrats and defeating Republicans, particularly in the Senate. There is waiting for McConnell to moderate. That's not going to happen. Waiting for the occasional moderate Republicans, the Collins, Murkowskis, Romney, not enough of them. Not going to happen. The only answer is to use the 2022 elections to change the dynamic of our politics by electing more Senate Democrats so Biden and Schumer can have a chance to carry forward their program by breaking, by changing the filibuster rules. And they won't be captive either by McConnell or Joe Manchin.
Yes. I think it's a matter of fate and timing. If a school shooting occurs 3 weeks before the election, if the Supreme Court says 3 weeks before the election, we are banning abortion, et cetera, the swing takes place. It's a timing thing. And sometimes these things are even created or manipulated so that they do come out at the proper time. Am I accurate in that assumption?
Well, I certainly think that timing is important. And I remember, historically,
there you go.
Democrats always, I mean, the off-year elections are never very good, but in 1962, President Kennedy faced down Nikita Khrushchev in the Cuban Missile Crisis, mm-hmm. and the Democrats did very well in the off-year elections 3 weeks later. But you can't count on that. And what I'm suggesting is we know what the record is. Whether Roe versus Wade is overturned in June or October, and it'll be June or July, actually, mm-hmm. We got to be able to focus even if it's happened several months before. Mm-hmm. And my argument is on the Senate elections, every issue that Democrats care about, if you look at all of them, with the exception of inflation, if you look at all the issues, they all come back to McConnell and the Senate Republicans.
Right.
So if your main concern is Roe versus Wade, if your main concern is guns, if you care about climate change, if you care about income inequality, if you care about the state of the democracy, voting rights, it's all McConnell.
Mm.
You have to reduce McConnell's power.
I think what you continue to say is probably the best way to do it, is to point it out and make sure that every American understands that. You know, it's interesting when I do these, when I do talk shows for these decades, it's amazing to me how the numbers of the American public that have no idea what we're talking about. None whatsoever. They choose to completely not learn, not be involved. And then when it comes time to vote, they don't know what they're doing. And I say that in a very sad manner. But I think that compared to other countries, the vast public doesn't really know what the hell's going on. Am I right?
No, I think well, I'm of two minds on it. One, sometimes when I read the focus groups that get done, I recognize that many people actually do understand it and are a little conflicted about, they have one issue they care about, not other issues, etc. But I think we're lacking. My wife is a great educator. She's been an educator all her life. And I think she spends a lot of time on civic engagement and civic education. And we all know that the younger generations don't have the education and civics that we grew up with. And that is harmful. A lot of people don't understand, and that's why the campaigns require a lot of energy and focus. But look, when I try to be optimistic, and it's not easy sometimes looking at the country at the moment, 2018 produced a blue wave of angry Democrats, angry and concerned Democrats, and that led to a Democratic House and an impeachment of Trump. 2020, great turnout, and that led to Joe Biden's victory. We have to do it again in 2022, irrespective of the fact that it's an off-year election and people don't feel good about things. You have to realize what's holding the country back is McConnell and the Republicans.
Yeah, that's why education of what's going on is and awareness is so important. We're talking about Mitch McConnell and the posse and the whole bit and one's awareness of what's going on. The book is about how the Senate Republicans have abandoned America, which is quite interesting. You know, you mentioned during the last segment that the House was responsible for two Trump impeachments. To be honest with you, didn't mean much of anything to me because I don't think it really meant much of anything to the country that was supporting him anyway. Having him removed from office or being admonished by the Senate would have been something else, but it only demonstrated this split that we have in our government, and one side prosecutes, the other says, no, that's whatever.
That's right. That's right. But look, that is part of the long degradation of the Senate and the disgraceful failure of the Senate.
Yes.
And spoiler alert, I'm old. I grew up, I came of age in college and law school during the last constitutional crisis, Vietnam morphing into Watergate.
Yes.
And that was a time when the Senate stood up, exercised its responsibility, and was partly responsible for forcing Nixon's resignation. Somebody said to me, well, do you think the Senate you grew up with would have acted differently toward Trump? And I said, yeah, in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
They'd have taken Trump down.
Exactly.
And they'd have broken with McConnell. And so it does require people who understand what they're supposed to be doing. Ron, one of my interviews, more than one of my interviews, said to me, the betrayal, that's a pretty harsh word. And I said, yeah, and it was a carefully chosen word. It was a betrayal because those are the people that have the particular responsibility. Those people with the privileged positions of being United States senators, they have the particular responsibility for checking a president who was overreaching and abusing his powers in a way that threatened the constitutional order. So number one, it's a betrayal because of their particular responsibility. But number two, it was a betrayal because they failed us, particularly in a year when we were going through a pandemic, catastrophic time for our country, 2020, a year when the president was spewing misinformation about what to do with the pandemic, unhinged president, and at the same time signaling quite clearly he wasn't going to accept the results of an election. So I understand something about politics and I understand something about compromise, but at a certain point, when the threat to the country was so severe, these people should have stood up for us.
Yes.
So betrayal is the right word for it.
It's exactly the right word, because there's a difference between acting in a certain manner and then the results are not good for the country. There's a difference between that and purposefully making sure that the American people come out on the bottom. And that's what they're doing. Yeah. They think that they're protecting their own people, but they're not. In doing so, they're destroying an entire country. So that is a betrayal, and it is a very fitting word for this. You mentioned Watergate. I was around doing that stuff too, as far as reporting is concerned. And I do recall that there was no CNN, there was no Fox News, there was Cronkite. I believe he was still around then. And there was just the hard network news, and people just heard the news and process it themselves and sat through it dependent on the government to do the right thing, which they did. I don't know if that's possible anymore with the extreme reporting, social media, where people can find their corner and thrive and grow and get upset in their corner. I think that is contributing as much to our division as anything else, and it also becomes a tool politically. Where do you stand on that?
Oh, I think it's a huge factor. I certainly agree with what you just said, in the sense that the changed media, starting with the 24/7 shrill cable news, mm-hmm. and then being more further amplified and made more dangerous by social media, poses, you know, a huge threat to our democracy. But at the same time, I would say that since I can't quite solve that problem yet.
Not just yet.
No. I think therefore it's incumbent on senators to be senators. I mean, no matter what's going on mm-hmm. with the media, those 100 people have a special responsibility. And to the extent that our country is more and more divided, they should be responding by making more of an effort to mm-hmm. bring us together. Mm-hmm. And the reason I always come back to McConnell, Senate leaders always had a particular responsibility to work across the aisle, to deal with, work with presidents, even of the other party, where they could, to bring people together, to find common ground. And yet we've got, in McConnell, we have a leader who has done the exact opposite. Always the architect of division, always rubbing every wound raw whenever he can. And that's had a disastrous effect. And that's why the people like Romney and Collins and Murkowski and others should be breaking with him, not just occasionally, but often.
It's interesting that there are a lot of people who have broken from the Trump way of life, who used to be in power, used to be in office, used to serve the president militarily, whatever the case may be. And then all of a sudden they just leave and these tremendous books come out saying, I stayed in there because if I didn't, things would have gone off the rails. How do you feel about that kind of thing?
I think that it's, that's a closer question, in the sense that sometimes, whether it was Defense Secretary Mattis or later Defense Secretary Esper, you can sometimes make that argument. Things would have been worse had I not been there. Close question. I mean, there's no great... There was a book written years ago pointing out that in America, officials don't resign on principle very often. Hmm. And I think they should. But it's a closer question. There's no, but the Senate's different. The Senate isn't supposed to be part of the Trump administration. I start my book with a quotation from Jeff Flake, the former senator from Arizona,
yes.
who criticized Trump very harshly, even after he was elected. And Jeff Flake said, we sometimes look at a presidency and executive branch in chaos and say, well, somebody should do something, without realizing the somebody is us. That's their responsibility. They weren't Trump-selected officials. They're supposed to act independent, temper their partisanship with a balance and with a commitment to the national interest.
Ira, did Trump ruin McConnell's direction, or had McConnell ruined his own direction even if Trump had never existed?
Oh, look. Ron, that's a vital question. And for I always say that it's important to realize that our politics was broken and our government was at the federal level was dysfunctional long before Trump came down the escalator to run. I mean, look at what McConnell did from the first day that Barack Obama was president. The obstruction started right away. It was planned even before Obama took office, but right away, at a time that the nation was teetering on the edge of a second Great Depression. And yet McConnell obstructed the economic stimulus that we needed to avoid that depression. So, this is a long time. McConnell likes to play, as he says in his memoir, the long game. This didn't start with Trump. Mm-hmm. Trump was a catastrophe, but McConnell is the person who's poisoned our political system from within.
I sometimes get the impression that McConnell would somehow like Trump to go away.
That's true.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah.
In other words, look. Going back, it's clear that McConnell did not believe that Trump would be elected, but he was very careful during 2016. He didn't criticize Trump at all. He didn't agonize about Trump's behavior, and he did what he could to help Trump during the campaign in various ways.
Right.
He held a vacancy, of course, on the Supreme Court, famously. So then, when McConnell sees Trump gets elected, he says, no, you don't get too many opportunities like this, a Republican president, a Republican Congress. So they work together on the things that they agree on, particularly the Supreme Court and tax cuts for the rich. At this point, and then when McConnell gets everything he wants in terms of the last Supreme Court nominee getting confirmed, he's ready for Trump to leave the scene. And I think he was genuine in his anger at Trump for the big lie and the insurrection. Great speeches that he made. But McConnell is responsible for the big lie festering for 5 weeks after the election.
Yes.
You know, that's when the 50 million Trump voters concluded that the election had been stolen. Because Trump was telling him it was stolen, and no one else was telling him on the Republican side that it hadn't been.
Right.
Now, that's why I wrote the book. He's got a lot to answer for.
No question. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, our final segment with Ira Shapiro. But first this.
Ain't always easy these days to know what to give your kids for snacks. Sugary this, high fructose that. Heck, even the stuff they call natural ain't always natural. But there's one snack when your kids ask for it, you know exactly what you're giving them.
I want Piggy Parts. I want Piggy Parts.
Professor Parker's preserved Piggy Parts are 100% all-natural salt-preserved pig parts. What parts, you ask? Well, some folks would call them scraps or ears or hoofs, but kids just call them delicious. And with their stiff, leathery texture, one Professor Parker's preserved Piggy Part will last a kid all afternoon. That's what we call value. So stock up now for school. You'll find them at the end of the pet food aisle in original, barbecue, or vinegar, garlic, teriyaki, onion, habanero, pineapple flavor. Give them a try and you'll see why kids say,
That's some good piggies.
Professor Parker's Preserve Piggy Parts.
We're talking with Ira Shapiro, author of The Betrayal, How Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republicans Abandoned America. We're having some great conversation here. Filibuster. How did that even happen? I'm at loss for words because I truly don't understand it. It seems like a tool of obstruction, which seems to be McConnell's definition, according to your book. How did this even come about? How is this even possible?
Well, the history is complicated. And, of course, we all have the frustration of filibusters now as an absolute tool of obstruction. It originated somewhat differently. The Senate started out as a place of unlimited debate. They basically debated, and when they were done, they finally would vote. And they would vote, by the way, by majority vote.
Mm-hmm.
That was how it worked. But over time, what happened was senators started finding out that, you know, they could sort of obstruct. And so in 1917, on the verge of World War I, with Republican senators obstructing what Wilson wanted to do in terms of declaring war, the Senate decided you had to be able to cut off debate at some point. And they adopted what they called cloture, which was a process by which you would cut off debate with a two-thirds vote at that time. So originally, cloture and the idea of cutting off debate was designed to bring debate to an end.
Mm.
You would have extended debate, but it would end at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is, if you're obstructing, you know, you use it as a tool to obstruct. For many years, it became a tool primarily to make sure that progress was not made on civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
It was used that way in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, etc., into the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, the filibuster was regarded as rare, real but rare.
Mm-hmm.
They used, you know, serious issues. McConnell mm-hmm. has changed that so that the filibuster is not rare, but it's a common tool used mm-hmm. to total obstruction.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not even real filibusters. I mean, they're just sort of,
wasting
time. Consent to that. So
yeah.
You can tie things up. You don't need 41 senators to tie things up.
No.
You can tie things up just by objecting to unanimous consent.
Mm-hmm.
For a person who grew up in the Senate,
yeah.
I've never been a fan of the rules.
Right.
I believe that they're arcane and archaic, and they haven't been reviewed since 1979. So I would change a lot of things,
yeah.
And I would change them when you don't know who's going to be in the majority in the next Congress.
Yeah.
You change them sort of prospectively, so that they're fair to the majority and the minority and the individual senators, no matter who they are.
Good question. And nothing's more moronic than seeing a senator stand up and on a pulpit and reciting fairy tales and nursery rhymes. It should get anybody angry.
Sure.
But it doesn't.
Everyone gets sort of inured to the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you pick up the newspaper and you say, Rand Paul is blocking the military support for Ukraine.
Yes.
Or Rand Paul or somebody else is blocking a nomination.
Right.
And you don't say to yourself, well, why should one person be able to do that?
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't sound like a very good system. Even when the Democratic and Republican leaders or finally agree to something,
yes,
one person can obstruct it.
Right.
That doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, it doesn't. I think that the news should be full of showing videos of your elected officials reciting nursery rhymes, and I think that,
right,
think that would be very effective. Let's get to the McConnell bottom line here. There's an election coming up, and McConnell is up for it. What do you think is going to happen there?
Well, he personally is not up for re-election this time. He got another term in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So public, the climate for Democrats is bad at the moment, but in the Senate, the map is favorable. 20 Republican seats are up and only 14 Democratic seats.
Mm-hmm.
5 Republican retirements and only 1 Democratic retirement.
Mm-hmm.
We've got good Democrats have very good candidates in Pennsylvania and Ohio,
mm-hmm,
John Fetterman and Tim Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Got a very good candidate, Sherry Beasley in North Carolina. We've got a great candidate in Florida and Val Demings,
mm-hmm,
against Marco Rubio. Got a lot of races we can win. Got a lot of races. And if you come out with 53 Democrats or 54 as opposed, mm-hmm, to 50, that would change the dynamic.
Mm.
I don't want to sound like a blind optimist by any means, but we're in our country's democracy is hanging by a thread.
No question.
And we have to sort of reclaim it in this election. Start reclaiming it.
It will be a demonstration of possibilities, not of end results, but of possibilities.
That's right.
Yeah. It's just amazing to me after the insurrection that there are so many Republicans who think that that really didn't occur or wasn't so bad. That kind of makes me shake my head more than any other thing is shakable in my head.
No, absolutely. Ron, I think if you had told me, if you had told me that we would go through the last couple of years with COVID,
mm-hmm,
and then Joe Biden being elected, mm-hmm, and then an insurrection, and yet we would be more divided than ever,
mm-hmm,
I wouldn't have believed that.
I wouldn't either.
And you know, that goes back, I think, to the tribal nature of our politics. It goes back to the media that you described.
Mm-hmm.
24/7 media and social media. And it goes back to leaders who don't act like leaders. You know, I've got a piece that I've written recently, which I'm shopping around, where I say, well, look, one person could change the gun control debate.
Right.
But we know he won't. We know he won't. He's going to fail us again. And right, the only answer to McConnell is to basically elect more Democrats and weaken him.
There's no question. It's the only way. Because all the common American believes in, believe me, Ira, is baby formula and gas prices. And that's about it, unfortunately. And your answer is, as makes sense, is look at Congress. They're supposed to do stuff too.
Well, okay. And I do think, they have every right to worry about the price. We all worry about the price of gasoline and inflation and baby, mm-hmm, formula. But guns, abortion,
mm-hmm,
climate change, voting rights,
took a back
a lot
seat.
Of things.
Yeah.
A lot of things.
There are a lot of things, but look what takes a back seat when you're at the gas station. I mean, it's amazing. Again, priorities of the American human mind sometimes surprise me.
Well, if you're at the gas station,
mm-hmm,
you have a right to be concerned, but the price of gas does not really reflect anything Joe Biden has
Correct.
Done.
Correct.
So,
correct. Anyway. Yes, the country can basically be run by Congress. That's the way it's, believe it or not, that's kind of, as you said. And we're bringing it back to the first line. Yeah.
And also the supply chain disruptions, mm-hmm, that were the result of an once-a-century pandemic.
Right.
I mean,
right,
people know that.
Right. we don't blame anybody for it, but it's once you have a situation, see what you can do to at least ease the pain. And that again is not on the guy sitting in the White House necessarily. It's the whole deal. So it's just a question of where your head's at. This book is a must. The Betrayal, How Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republicans Abandoned America. How can people follow you, Ira Shapiro?
I've got a website, www.irashapiroauthor.com. I can be found at Twitter, at Shapiro Global. Mm-hmm. But I'm very grateful for the chance to talk to your audience.
Well, that'll do it for me today. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you to my guest. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. But until then, I wish you peace.